welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Monique Scott and Joel Elston, and this is your daily dose of happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today, especially since Joel is back and he gets to meet Monique, and I get to talk with Joel and I get to talk with Monique. This is a good day. This is a really good day. Loving this. So, Monique, what do you think? I mean, you just met Joel. You want to hear some stuff from Joel? I mean, he's a pretty cool guy, I have to say.
Definitely. I'm ready. I'm all ears.
All right, here we go. So, how's it going there, Joel? What's happening?
Things are really good. I'm in Central Virginia. We're having just an incredible day. Bright sun, about 50 degrees. It's a little sign of spring here, so it's wonderful right here.
Beautiful.
Nice.
Yeah. And this is actually a good opportunity for me to let people know the LOA Today app is now updated, and it includes, like I've been promising now for a few weeks, it includes a complete insertion of the book, Your Daily Dose of Happy, Real Success Stories of the Law of Attraction, which we did back in 2018. And Joel actually had a submission in that book, too. You'll remember you submitted the Marcus story to that particular one. And this is kind of my way of segueing over to that. But before I segue over, I just want to let people know it is now out on both the iPhone and on the Android phones. And so you can get it both of those ways. It's been out there for a few days now on both PCs and Macs. So whatever platform you're using, make sure you have the latest version. It's going to be at least 1.2.0, I believe, is the minimal version. 1.2.1 is the one you really want. And check it out. It's 55 manifestation stories, and most of them are written by law of attraction coaches and life coaches and so forth, and really, really cool, interesting stories from a wide variety of perspectives. So check it out. Check out Joel's story, too. And I'm going to kind of call on you, Joel, because we haven't talked about Marcus for a few years now. And I was just wondering, can you give us like an update? Well, first, give people an idea of what the story is, because a lot of our listeners haven't heard the story. And, you know, what's been going on with this guy?
Well, I'll tell the story and then sort of update where we're at.
Okay.
Marcus is a young man I met, and that is not his real name, so no one needs to worry. Right. I met him in my practice. He was in foster care. And he had been to every therapist in town, and I know the social worker that was in charge of his case, and he just an outstanding young man. She could see his strength, and no one was able to really get through to him. He had a really bad backstory. His mother had died when he was in foster care. He was 8 years old. He had no other family, so he just got put into the system. And when I sat down with him the very first time, I asked him to, I agreed to meet with him, and those, unfortunately, those cases aren't, my services aren't covered in those cases. So that's pro bono work. And I do that quite a bit, but I sat down with him, and he was expecting, you know, the typical therapy response. And so I was asking, so what do you like to do? And he's like, well, he said, I'm oppositionally defiant. I'm depressed. And I'm like, No, what do you like to do? And he's like, well, I'm on these medications. And I'm like, you're not answering my, what do you like to do? I don't understand.
Right.
And he was, he was baffled by my question. He said, I don't know what you mean. I said, what is fun to you? And he didn't really, all he could come up with was stuff. So I said, okay, well, tell me about your medications. And he said, I forget the number, but it was an astronomical number. I'd have to go back to my file, but it was something like 12 medications he was on or something of that. And, you know, psychotropic medications. And the first one he started with was Prozac, and he went through the list. And so I said, well, why are you on Prozac? And he says, well, I'm depressed. And I said, okay. And, I just started with Prozac, and this young man was very bright. But in the beginning, he had been so used to traditional therapy that he was answering almost as anticipated as everybody always asked, as everybody had asked before. So I said, well, tell me about Prozac. And he said, well, it's because I'm depressed. And my obvious question was, well, why are you depressed? And he was getting really frustrated with the process that I was doing with him. I just kept asking questions. He said, well, I'm depressed because I'm in foster care and my mom died. And I said, well, being depressed makes sense for being in foster. I said, but what does Prozac do? And he goes, well, they say it helps with some brain chemicals. And I said, okay. And so we kept, and so I sort of let him walk himself into the trap of, or the awakening. And I said, so it helps with brain chemicals. So I said, but I'm just confused. And that's when he's really getting frustrated. I said, I don't understand how you say your depression is because your mom died in foster care, which is completely what you should be. You should be depressed. That's what happens. But I'm understanding how Prozac is helping your mom not be dead and you not be in foster care. And his little brain started looking, and then we went through all these medications, and I slowly got him to understand that he was listening to what everybody else was saying. His mom had died, horrible scenario. He was put in foster care. They tried to keep, you know, he was very upset. They told him he was oppositionally defiant. He was depressed. He was ADD. And I forget all the other labels he had had. And he literally was behaving exactly as each one was described to him. He was oppositionally defiant. He was depressed. He was, I forget, there was another one, intermittent explosive disorder. And just these weird diagnoses that clearly didn't fit this kid. Right. And so as I got really strong in my conversation with him, really, he started understanding where we're going. I explained to him that he had developed an internal dialogue that was built on years of being told these things. And the time, even though he was 8 in foster care, I believe at the time he was 11 or 12 when I was seeing him. So I said, you know, 3 years of you being basically brainwashed. And I said, so you're literally living up to the diagnosis you've been given. And he just was so into the process. And so I said, your choice, but are you going to keep doing this? You want to, and he instantly, he's somebody that just instantly recognized that to be the truth. And he said, I said, so all of this is in your control. And he went to his teacher the next day, true story, and told his teacher he was no longer oppositionally defiant. He asked to be moved to the front of the class. He apologized to his foster care mother, for his behavior and said he would no longer act out that way, that he had been given some bad information. And he said he needed an appointment with a psychiatrist as soon as possible because he needed to get off of all of this medication. And he instantly, literally within a very short period of time, changed his whole perspective of himself. His grades increased. I mean, it was, he asked to be moved up into the front of the class so he could pay attention and not be distracted. He became a leader in his foster care home. Everything happened. So, probably 2 years after that, 2 or 3 years after, he was about 14, I got a text from him that, you know, he'd been chosen by a family to be adopted. And he was so ecstatic, and I wasn't able to go to the adoption, but I was able to go to closed circuit and I was able to see him, and he was thriving. And that's probably been 2 or 3 years now. He's about to graduate high school, and he has been accepted to the University of South Carolina. So this is a kid that there was nothing wrong with him but his programming. And the law of attraction of his programming literally gave him everything he was attracting. And, you know, I feel sorry for him, but at the same time, once he realized I'm in control of this, my perspective dictates my reality. I mean, he said that over and over. He claims he's going to get that as his tattoo. My perspective dictates my reality. So
I love it.
But he is this amazing young man that everyone that meets him is very much in tune with just how powerful he is with the law of attraction. He is really into this process. He ultimately wants to be, sort of do what I do. He's taking psychology classes now, but very much into the law of attraction concept as applied to psychology using the positive psychology model. And he testifies to how much it's changed. He said he's off all medication. He was on a small dose of Ritalin for a little while because he does have ADD, but he learned how to manage that without the Ritalin. He's very anti-medication on any level. So it is this incredible success story that just continues to grow. He's probably one of the most positive young people I've ever met. His grades are, he has a 3.6. He has some honor classes in there. And this is a throwaway kid that society basically, if he would have followed the stereotypical route, he never would have been adopted because of his behavior. He would have gone, the moment he turned 18, he basically had been put on the streets. Within a year, he had ended up in prison. And that's the system that lives in these kids. And all that he changed, and all that he changed, I mean, the thing that changed him the most, the most important thing, he literally changed how he thought about himself. Walt and I have had this discussion for multiple years. I find the younger people are, the more easily they can accept the concept of the law of attraction and apply them, because they don't have the 50 years of baggage most of us have of telling them otherwise. Him at 12 just realized, I'm in charge of this. And he snapped his fingers and changed his life, and literally. And I admire him so much. We remain very close. He's just a pleasure to talk to. I mean, we're friends on social media, and I get texts from him frequently. He's got a girlfriend. He lifts weights. I mean, this is a kid that anybody would be grateful to have in their life. And he's going to be a blessing. He'll change some lives, and it all changed when he decided to change his perspective. It was that simple.
How's that, Monique?
That was amazing. That was amazing. And so easy to believe. And I tend to agree with you, Joel, because I personally had a client, and that was a lot of her struggle. Walt, you and I have talked about this, you know, from her Catholic background, and just trying to get or unprogram or reprogram, you know, her mind to accept the concept of the law of attraction. She wanted to, but kind of like what you said, you know, she's got 30, 40 years of programming that now she has to unprogram just to try to believe that things are possible for her or that she can change.
And Monique, you're so on point, because I share this all the time, so it's probably even repetitive from my last session, but you know, and I apologize ahead of time. I do that a lot, but our subconscious brain operates at about 40 million bytes per second. Our conscious brain is only about 40,000 bytes per second.
Mm-hmm.
30 years, 40 years of programming of your subconscious brain that you do not have direct access to is where that comes from. So as much as her core beliefs and she, you know, that Catholic, that guilt, all that, you know, recovering, you know, all that stuff that comes mm-hmm. with a lot of religions. I personally am a recovering Southern Baptist. I always tell people. Yeah. So, yes.
Me too.
Like, wow. That was a lot of reprogramming. But
it sure was.
but once your client, you know, gets to a place or gets, you know, the access to the subconscious only comes through repetitive, you know, self-talk and getting there where you're like the young man, you know, Marcus, he didn't have 12 years of, only had 12 years of, you know, programming, and really 4 years of bad programming and sort of the science behind it. Up until 7 years old, you're basically in sort of in a trance-like state anyway. So really he only had about 4 or 5 years of really negative programming that once he was able to let it go, he had a really quick shortcut. Your client had 40 years and had it reinforced. And the law of attraction, because we do get what we expect to get.
Yes.
Not only did she have the programming, she also had proof in her mind. See, this always goes wrong. This always happens. And,
do you know her personally? So, because I swear.
I do. Just only because I every one of my clients is her.
Right.
But you're so on. And that's the exciting piece to me, is when you can get to that place where you start reprogramming, then the instant results, you know, that's just how it happened in my life, is once I started realizing, wow, you know, I'm sort of in control of all this. And the more I believed that, the more it became, and it just took over. And right now it's not even it's on autopilot. My subconscious is caught up with my conscious.
Right. Because now it becomes a lifestyle because we've done it for so long.
Yes. Yes. And it never failed. It just never failed me. And I just watching people sort of use this sort of getting out of the sort of that victim mindset of what, you know, the rehearsed narratives that keep us stuck. And, you know, Walt and I used to always joke when we would have input from listeners, there were always two factors. There was either, how can I get a better relationship? Or how can I get more money? Those were almost always the two things that people asked. Now, ironically, we had one young man that was awesome that I forget his name. This has been a couple of years ago. He he started doing Law of Attraction. He said, hey, Walt, Joel, I'm doing a great job with it. However, I came in because I wanted to get more money. The rest of my life's going great, but I still don't have more money. Well, his focus was on the having no money, when the rest of it, he just sort of like everything on the other side, other things getting better. So you see how people always are, they want it, but the hard part to explain is wanting it too much takes you all the way back around where you're really looking at having the lack of it. And I don't know you very well, Monique, or know you at all, but I can connect with where I get you. I'm very much Law of Attraction based with Abraham Hicks. You know, Mike Dooley's one of my big guys. So I tend to, while I don't follow any of them exactly literally, I tend to be influenced both by Abraham Hicks and, you know, what you think is your reality, period. That's it.
I completely agree. And Walt, I hope that we're not like hogging the conversation from you or anything.
I'm encouraging this. I'm loving the fact that you guys are going. This is great.
Okay. Yeah. What I have found,
By the way, I just want to say one thing. I wondered how long it would take for the two of you to realize that you were both ex-Southern Baptists. It took 10 minutes. It didn't take all that long.
Not long at all. But Joel, you know, what I found with my clients in terms of manifesting money is a lot of people don't really realize these negative money narratives, if you will, these money negative stories that they've been repeating and saying to themselves over and over again, especially if you grew up in a household where there wasn't a lot of money, or you always heard your parents say stuff like, money doesn't grow on trees, or we can't afford that, or that's too expensive, or what do you think I'm made of money, that kind of stuff. And what they don't realize is hearing that as a child over and over and over again, it gets programmed, and then they start to say it to themselves. So some of my clients, I remember one client, she could easily afford a four-figure skyrise apartment that she wanted, right? But in her mind, she kept telling herself, I can't afford that, I can't afford that, I can't afford that. I'm like, are you kidding me? You're doing $77,000 a month. You can't afford it? What are you talking about? That's crazy, right? But she had to reprogram her mind around money because she literally felt like she could not afford it, even though what she saw in her bank account said otherwise, that negative programming concerning money was holding her back from really being able to scale her business beyond that. She was much more capable of doing way more than that. But
sure,
you know,
that is one of my other stories, and I actually, my son and I years ago, he wanted to stop at a McDonald's, and mm-hmm. I never go to McDonald's. I hate McDonald's, but but the young man behind the counter, I drove up in a Porsche, and So the young man in the behind the counter, very nice young man, and we started a dialogue. He saw what I drove up in, and he said, "What do you do for a living?" I said, "I'm a life coach." And wow, and I said, but I could tell how, I mean, really enjoyed talking. So, well, what are you going to do? He said, "Well, I'm just graduated high school, and I'm going to get into the McDonald's management training program. I've been invited to do that. I'm really excited about that." I said, "That's great." I said, "Have you thought about doing anything else?" And he was, he was an African American young man that had, you know, super kid. That energy was right there. And I said, "Well, you know, as we got our food, I said, here's my card. If you ever wanted to talk about anything or advice, I might have some ideas." He goes, "What do you mean?" I said, "Just put it in your wallet. Call me if you want to." So about a week later, he calls me and he says, "I don't know what you were talking about." I said, "Well, look," I said, I want you to, nothing's wrong with McDonald's, but why don't you maybe look out there what's better? I said, there's, what did you like in school? And so we go through this whole process of just sort of evaluation. And he loves science. And I said, "Well, you know, there's a program that would really match you." I said that you could go to school for free. It's a 6-month certification, 9-month certification. You become an X-ray technician. Mm-hmm. And he's like, "What?" And I said, "Well, yeah, just call I had the contact of the lady. Just call her." And he said, "Well, I don't have any money. I said, well, it's free. You're missing the free part. They'll train you. And I said, about halfway through the program, the hospital will hire you for your sort of your internship, and they pay like $20 an hour. And he's like, that's more than I make it, a lot more than I'll be making at McDonald's. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, he said, but what are you charging me? I go, I'm not charging anything. I just want you to just do that. Right. He couldn't believe this was that easy. So about 2 hours later, his mother calls and goes off on me. She said, what the hell are you telling me about to my son? You know, he's the first one to graduate high school. He's the one that is going to take, and he's got this opportunity at McDonald's. You're trying to, you know, what do you want from him? I said, ma'am, I don't want anything from him. I'm just telling him there's an opportunity. And she said, you want something. Nobody does this for free. You want something from him.
Wow.
I said, no, I don't. She said, if he ruins this opportunity at McDonald's because you put these big ideas in his head. And so anyway, I calmed her down a little bit. And, I
not
said,
easy.
Well, just, yeah, not even, I said, and I explained, I said, you have generational poverty. I said, I'm not trying to be negative, but you believe this is all he can do. And I see this incredible kid that can do whatever he wants to do. And we just see him differently. Mine comes from a different perspective, but you don't have to, he doesn't have to call these people. Just call. So anyway, the kid calls, is accepted immediately. He thrives in the program. Just can't believe that they're paying him to go to school at some point. He gets, he's loving it. He's in his internship, he starts working at the hospital. So there's this doctor that he meets that just loves this kid. He's an old white dude. So, I mean, just like, he just loves this kid. He's like, yeah, this is it. And so they become really close. The doctor hires him after he gets his certification to do the x-rays at his private office. And in addition to working at the hospital, so this kid starts making about 80 grand a year within about doing really well. And the best part of the story where it gets just almost unbelievable is this doctor is an older doctor. He has no kids. He has a very big practice. And so all the families became very close. Like they spend holidays together. And so that, you know, I was telling the story over a period of years, but on Christmas, I think of 2017, maybe, they were over there and the doctor and his wife tells the young man and his mom, so we have a gift for you, and is an envelope. He said, he's an alumni for the University of Texas. He said, we're going to send you to college to be a medical doctor and your job is going to be to take over my practice when you're done.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
Amazing.
And the mom has become one of my biggest supporters, apologizes almost every time we talk. She went back to school and is a nurse.
Wow.
So this is generational reversing of poverty.
Yeah.
But my point is, like you're talking about that dialogue that Monique was talking about, mm-hmm. of going – it's just instilled sometimes in cultures or just generational, you know, I grew up in a family of a lot of addiction and a lot of lower middle class dysfunction. And I mean that with just always feeling like you were the victim of everything. Like the man got, you know, if you have any money, you're lucky or any of that stuff. And that reprogramming, I mean, my mom, I love her. She's passed away and, you know, but she was the most anxious woman about like money and fear. She struggled with money her entire life. Even my dad, who did very well, her anxiety over money eventually overrode his sort of, you know, mindset. It's incredible to watch that happen over time. She really attracted a lack of money in her life, her entire life. And it was really sad to watch. It really was. And I had to break away from all of those things. And I don't have a lack of money anymore. I have an abundance and continue to have an abundance and have unlimited. I can't, you know, can't be any more busy than I am now. I have a great career. And it all changed by reprogramming all this stuff, just like you're talking about. And it's not easy. And when we say that's all there is to it, that's a lot harder than that is all there is to it. Yeah.
Right.
Interesting. Interesting thing I got to share too. In the live stream, we got people listening in the live stream. One of them is named Rebecca, and she was asking about your background, Joel. She wanted to know if you were a therapist. And I said, well, he was a licensed therapist. He's since kind of transitioned over to being a life coach. And she says, well, as a therapist myself, that's something that resonates with me. And she says she's also an Abraham Hicks LOA believer. So she's just blown away that she found this podcast today. I just had to let you guys know that.
Well, yeah. And I'm glad she's listening. One of the things that I found with traditional therapy, and this is my opinion, so much training in traditional therapy. First of all, there was limitations and if you're licensed to do that, you have sort of a boundary that you can work within. And I realized a lot of my thoughts of law of attraction was directly opposed to my training in therapy. And so I certainly am not upset with anybody who's a therapist. I think there's certainly a place for that. But a lot of traditional therapy has become so trauma based, and I agree trauma is a big factor in all of this. But you can be stuck in trauma, and I know some of the models basically they never work toward getting out of trauma, and so it's this law of attraction sort of offers I forget which one, but one of the Abraham Hicks books she literally talks about childhood trauma. And they said, well, does it matter? And she said, if you want it to matter, I mean, it matters. And I know that rubs traditional therapists just really raw when you do that. And I know by no means do I ever minimalize someone's trauma, but I also accept there needs to be a period behind that at some point in your life with a new start over versus a comma constantly behind that trauma description and how it's affecting you. No matter where you're from, your background, your disability, who your parents were, no matter what the scenario, your color, your wherever, the law of attraction is completely fair. It works equally with everyone and it has no bias.
And see exactly what he's talking about, Walt. Lynn's, he's talking about me.
He's talking about all of us.
Yeah, but particularly around my rape. Remember,
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Being able to forgive Kevin and moving on and deciding that it's going to make me better and not bitter. That's exactly what he's talking about. I decided. So, I know you're just now meeting me, Joe, but I shared a couple, I think maybe on my very first podcast here episode, Walt and I talked about me being raped when I was 15 and having the ability to forgive Kevin, the guy who did it, and just moving on with my life, not allowing that trauma to affect me negatively to where I never wanted to be in a relationship or I didn't want to have sex or, I hated men or whatever could have come out of that. So just exactly what you're saying, it really depends on you. You get to decide. And I think that that's where a lot of people get hung up, because the concept of understanding that you create your own reality, right? The law of attraction, like you said, Joel, it works whether you believe in it or not. Just like gravity. Absolutely. You throw something up, it's coming down. It's going to happen.
Walt and I probably have said that every episode we've just ever
about.
Yeah,
and it's so true. So, I mean, just to your point, I'm an example of exactly what you're saying.
And congratulations, by the way. But what? I'm sorry that horrible experience happened, but I'm so impressed that there's a book by a professor named Carol Dweck. It's called Growth Mindset. Your response to your rape was a growth mindset. Trauma or events like that have a tendency to either defeat you or propel you.
Right.
And you don't realize you're in charge of that. You chose to be propelled. You'll never hear my words. If I could beat his ass for you, I would, I promise you. But let me tell you, I don't give him, you didn't give him the power to affect your life. You took that away from him and you took back your life. I have huge, huge respect for that, Monique. Thank you.
By the way, Rebecca's jumping in and saying, oh my God, thank you for sharing your thoughts on the field. She's just like blown away by what you guys are saying.
You're welcome, Rebecca.
This is the kind of thing I think that needs to be heard more often. That's one of the reasons why we do this podcast. I think what happens is we kind of get all humans, regardless of what our field is, where our expertise is, how we spend our time and so forth. We all kind of, we acquire beliefs and thoughts and understandings that kind of run counter to what society accepts. And so we're often reluctant to, you know, cross lines and, you know, risk offending people and so forth. That's one of the reasons I love doing this show, because we don't worry too much about those lines. We just simply tell our truths right, the way we know them. And one of the reasons I've organized it so that I have so many co-hosts is I get so many great perspectives that way. But I mean, I was just sitting back listening to you guys go back and forth about this. And then Rebecca comes on. I'm thinking, wow, this is really great. This is powerful. This is excellent.
Yeah, it is.
So
it truly is.
One thing I wanted to ask both of you guys, from your experience as people who grew up in Southern Baptist, Joel described himself as recovering Southern Baptist. and you've described to me, Monique, about how you've kind of created sort of an amalgamated version of what you used to believe. You kind of tied in what your current beliefs are, and you've created your own. You create your own religion. That's the best way I can think of to describe it.
Right.
But I guess my question is, if you are coming from a background like that, which, I mean, I certainly have my own experience. I was brought up in a Presbyterian church, but, you know, certainly my own things that I rejected and so forth, and challenges I went through in my mind. But as you leave stuff behind and you take on new beliefs, and you're dealing with all of the pressures that are involved in that, because there are expectations from family, from society and so forth. If you're talking to somebody else who may be going through the same thing, how do you advise them to go through something like that? How do you advise them to make that transition? Because, I mean, I had nobody to talk to about it. I mean, my parents were very much pillars of the church, so I couldn't really talk to them about it. At the time, nobody even knew that it was a thing to talk about, so I didn't have anybody to even talk about. But if somebody had talked to me, I'm not even sure what I would have asked them. I mean, how do you help somebody through that?
Do you want to go? Monique,
yeah, go ahead, Monique, and I'll listen to you and I'll respond.
Okay. Well, for me personally, what I try to get people to understand is, in my opinion, is that when it comes to religion or religious beliefs or spiritual beliefs, I believe that the pastor, your minister, whatever they're called, wherever you are, right? He is teaching the Bible, and I'm just going to talk about the Bible from a Christian point, right? He's teaching the Bible, right? But if you believe in Jesus Christ, if you are a Christian, my belief is, I tell people, yes, they're teaching you the Bible. However, that's their interpretation. You get to read it for yourself. It's a personal relationship with Jesus Christ or God or Holy Spirit or whatever you believe, right? It's a personal relationship for a reason. I believe it is our duty to go within, to find God within, to connect with God within, to get that guidance. Not for me to have the pastor tell me his interpretation of the Bible. Now, I know that that's his job. That's what he's supposed to do. And I get that. But in my opinion, that's his version. I get to decide what my life looks like. And I tell people, you do not have to care what other people think. You do not. Yes, I understand that's your mom, your dad, your siblings, whatever, right? And I'm definitely not saying don't be respectful towards them. Absolutely not. However, this life is your own and it's all you got. I know for me, I would tell my clients, some of the decisions that I made, my mom wasn't happy with, but my mom also wasn't living my life either. She lived her life. She decided to get married. She decided to have kids. She decided whatever. It was okay for Marie, but Monique has her own life and I get to decide. And just because she wasn't happy with it didn't mean I wasn't going to do it. It just means she wasn't happy with it, right? So that's kind of the perspective that I've come towards with my clients, just reminding them that everything is your own decision. And just because that's what the pastor says it is, you need to find that out for yourself. Don't be afraid to go to God for yourself and have your own personal relationship and see what the Holy Spirit or God or Spirit, infinite intelligence, source, energy, whatever you call he, she, or it. See what it's saying to you about how you're living your life or the things that you want to do, and look for that guidance from him directly. I tell them you don't have to, if that doesn't resonate with your spirit, you literally don't have to take it. And so it was no longer resonating with my spirit, and I no longer took it.
Wow, all right.
I like that. And I'm a lot of, I went through a huge struggle at a young age. I remember being, you know, my family was in church every Sunday. I was in Sunday school.
Yep.
And I remember just, I was really, I would ask the questions like, how did the penguins get on the ark? And stuff that just made absolutely no sense. I kept saying that this, I'm sorry, I just can't, but instinctively, sincerely, I knew there was something. I felt an energy. I felt a presence, but the story they were telling me just didn't add up. I mean, I tried to talk to my mom and I tried to talk to the preacher and I was told that Satan was interfering and, you know, all this other stuff. And I'm not buying that either. I mean, while I have a huge belief in God, I the whole structure of religion, now that I sort of see it, is, you know, there's a lot of profit. There's a whole industry of religion. And again, I'm not, and everybody does what everybody wants to do. I'm good with all that, but there is something that goes full circle with me. When I was struggling, I just kept instinctively knowing there was something there. And I was asking everybody, even went to my hometown library, just trying to look up spiritual books. Well, again, a Southern Baptist town in Florida is not going to have anything. You know, the spiritual book they have is just two different versions of the Bible. You know,
right.
The modern version of the King James. That's it. That's
right.
The
Bible.
Yeah. So, yeah. And ironically, this is the time where Seth Speaks, James' book, Seth Speaks, was huge. It came out. And I remember asking my mom, I said, there's got to be more. And she said, there's nothing else. And your search for it is what's going to send you to hell. And so I'm like, okay, well, probably don't want to do that path. So, you know, when your own family and your preacher that you're going to, so I then, as life went on, I went through my struggles. And again, I instinctively knew there was a God. But then when I sort of, my introduction to Law of Attraction was The Secret. I've talked to Walt about that a bunch, which led me to a bunch of other studies. I've read all this Jane Roberts stuff, Seth's material. Yeah, it really opened my eyes to, wow, I just started seeing things differently. So without getting into what my specific, you know, but I believe that helping other people just is exactly what Monique said. To me, part of our journey on this planet is to discover that.
Right.
And so I, Monique, you probably don't know this about me. I've adopted children and my youngest son is now 15. I adopted him 5 years ago when he was 10. Mm-hmm. And he, one day early in the adoption, when he's living with me, he goes, what is our religion? I go, I don't know what yours is, but you know, I'm a little of this, a little of that. And I said, but I want you to ask me all the questions you want. You have access to everything. And then you tell me what you believe, then I'll finally tell you what I believe. But I don't want to influence. I want you to get to that journey.
Right. Right.
And so one day I get a call from the school. And again, I live in a sort of a rural area of Hanover, but it's called Hanover, right outside of Richmond. And the lady was really nice. She said, I see that you and Justin are Buddhist. And I'm like,
what?
And I just went, I'm like, yes, we are. And, and she said, well, I didn't know, do we have any like food restriction? I said, no, we're good. We're fine. So I laughed and I went to Justin. I said, so we're Buddhist? And he goes, I am. I don't know about you, but it was hilarious. So, And so, you know, I've encouraged them. I've since shared my time, and believe it or not, a lot of the Buddhist thought is exactly what I believe. It goes it matches Law of Attraction a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So my point is, I always try to, just like you're saying, Monique, just try to, this is your search. Mm-hmm. It is, you know, God didn't put us here to just accept blindly the fact that, you know, every 12-year-old boy who masturbates is going to burn in hell. I'm having a really hard time believing that. That's just not something that I'm going to get, you know, on board behind.
Right.
you know, or somebody born into the country that never hears the message in a specific way, and they're going to burn in hell for that. It just doesn't match. And, you know, so when I got to my awakenings, and I sort of, and I always, I'm still open. I still like to learn. I still study different philosophies and religions. So, you know, I factually know there's a God, and I have sort of an evolving, I've created in my own way, sort of my own religion. Yeah. And I can break it up, you know, 72% Buddhist. I'm this, but I'm very pleased. I'm very comfortable with mine. And when you're dealing with people who are like, my mother would say, before she passed away, she would be like, we had a really good conversation about 6 months before she passed away. And she said, this is the way she started. She said, I really am worried that you're going to burn in hell. That was her conversation. And I said, Mom, I said, I know you are. And I said, I don't believe you're going to. And I'm very comfortable with mine. I just ask you to give me the honor of not dismissing the journey that I've been on to come to what I've come to. Mm-hmm. I am not putting down your religion.
Right.
And I'm asking that you accept my spiritual practices are right for me. And I'm willing to deal with any consequences that may come my way. But I wish we could put that behind us, because this is too much of a topic between us. I want to move past that. Mm-hmm. And we came to that last 6 months of her life. We never discussed it again, which is really good.
Nice. Especially considering what kind of a warrior your mom was. I mean, you touched on that, but we've talked about that before. And she was a world champion. Let's be perfectly honest.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. She was relentless, and she believed all her heart. I mean, and fully and blindly and mm-hmm. to the most fundamental side of it. And at the same time, she was able, giving her great credit toward the end, she was able to accept that while we strongly disagree on probably 90% of what she believed, that nonetheless, she could see the changes in my life. She said, well, you know, I'll be honest with you. She said, I never would say this to anyone, but what's going on in your life? Something's working. So I got to give you a little credit there. And
considering the journey you've been on. Yeah. It basically was laid out for her in black and white, just seeing what you went through, because she knew perfectly well what you went through, and you went through. You actually did go through hell, actually.
Yeah.
You just was a hell on earth. And yet the way you came out, I mean, it's impossible to argue with the result. That's the thing. How do you argue with the result? You can't.
You can try. Yeah. And again, I'll tell people when I start this journey with them and coaching, you know, as we look at those areas, because I start with, you know, the law of attraction doesn't require any change in religious belief. There's parts of the Bible that discuss, you know, belief, you know, faith of a mustard seed, you know, you can move a mountain. There's a lot of one of the books that was removed from the Bible, I think it was the Gospel of Thomas, is basically a law of attraction book.
That's all it is.
Yeah. It literally is like, you know, and Thomas's claim was that this is the conversations him and Jesus had sort of privately. And, of course that didn't match the narrative. You're going to burn in hell unless you do this. And, you know, so that we had to take that out of the Bible. But in Seth speaks, she also refers to, or Seth actually says that Jesus existed, but if, for example, in the Lord's Supper, he was trying to demonstrate that the bread you're eating is me. If you are God, God is within you. I'm not the Savior. The bread is all of us. We're all God. God is eternal. That was the message. That doesn't work out to a very good religion when you don't have, you know, doesn't make a lot of money. So they had to adjust that a little bit, you know, but Seth claimed that that's exactly what Jesus and Buddha and Allah were all trying to teach in different ways.
And I completely agree with that. That just kind of goes back to the conversation that you and I had. What is it, last week or the week before? Well, when I was saying, you know, God is within us. We all are God. I believe that every human being, every creature, everything on earth that's ever been created by God, whether we know it exists or not, we're all just little pieces of God. And that's it. Because we're all Him. Just Him manifested in different physical forms, whether that's water, whether that's air, the moon, whatever, right?
And Monique, something that always resonates with me, when I meet, again, we met, 45 minutes ago?
Yes.
but we already know each other. Like, we've known each other for 20 years.
So, I know.
So when you meet, and when you meet people who have all been on, we have incredibly different backgrounds. We come from very different places. We have many different experiences, but we all, you and I end up at the same place basically. And when I meet people, Marcus, that, you know, kid that I met when he was 11 years old, people from all different backgrounds, we all end up at the same place. We come to the same belief. Mm-hmm. I find that the most, you know, I understand when you're born into a certain religion and you spend the rest of your life there, that makes sense. But for so many people to sort of get on, when I sort of describe what I believe, and people, oh my God, I basically believe that too. When you come to it yourself on, and almost have that awakening where you, I, and not to upset anyone, I sincerely believe what I believe. I mean, it's in the bottom of my heart. I know it's there. I've lost a son, when he was, 23 in a car accident, and I have had conversations with him since then and reinforcing exactly what I believe. So I am very comfortable with me. I don't need to defend it, nor do I try to force it on anyone. But I think just your best advice, as going back to Walt's question, is everybody has to get to this on their own terms. It's like with the law of attraction, everybody along the way, this is the funny part. We all get to the same place. When you first hear it, you're like, I believe that completely, except how could a child invite into, then you get into how kids could attract all the, and then you get distracted on, you know, no kid would ever ask to be raped.
Right.
But everybody sort of comes along the same way before you believe it. And you have to sort of, so to me, it's a reinforcer. Like we've all been on different journeys, but we sort of go through the same process as you arrive here. That's exciting to me.
Yeah.
I think it's very exciting. In fact, it's part of my worldview of just how much change I see in my lifetime among large numbers of people where their religions are concerned. And most of it among people who have absolutely no idea what the law of attraction is, who have no idea what conscious creation is, who have never heard of all this source energy stuff. Mm-hmm. And yet they are, in their own way, finding through a variety of different routes, they're finding their way to new belief systems. And I think that's just so encouraging to me. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but it's just so encouraging to me.
I feel like, the same way.
Oh, wow. I mean, it's
the most exciting part of my work.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
I agree completely. You and I are on the same page. When you have people make sort of, they get there themselves, obviously through the tools you give them. That's the most rewarding part, when you literally see people change everything. Their whole environment changes. The people around them change because they have to respond to this person differently. Yes. You know, it's like sending ripples out. Like, you know, the kid we were talking about earlier, Marcus, you know, he's changing the world. He certainly changed his world. The young man that became the x-ray technician is in the process of being a doctor now at the University of Texas. You have, those are ripples that are altering the world forever. In many different directions, you can never predict. So everybody has those stories, and it excites me to be able to. That's why the best job in the world. I get to literally do this all day. I can't believe that I've been so blessed to live a life. I get to do this for a living. I make really good money. I have a life I want to live, and I owe it all to sort of this concept of I'm in charge of all this, and through the way I think and feel.
Hey, Monique, you went through the experience a couple weeks ago with the storm that came through Houston, which, of course, threw Texas for a loop because they aren't used to that kind of weather. And it threw the whole electrical system out of whack. You guys were dealing with rolling outages and so forth. I'm curious, because Texas is certainly part of what we might describe as the Bible Belt. From your perspective, what do you think? How did all of this play out there's not a single mindset, so I don't like the way I was starting to ask that question, but in the various mindsets of people who live in the area, how was it playing out from their spiritual perspectives, do you think? I mean, was this like a reinforcement of what they had always believed? Was this something that was shifting things around? How was it affecting people from a mental, spiritual perspective?
I personally think that when you have a group of people who all collectively believe or collectively are fearful, collectively have a negative mindset or thought process, right? I believe collectively that affects people. It expands out. So if I'm in a household, my daughter's in the household, a few other people, and we're all scared, right? And the few times we do get a chance to talk to somebody else, or we do get a chance to see what's on the news, right? Kind of like the whole coronavirus thing, right? It just exploded because, in my opinion, the media had all this fear mongering going around. Not that it's not real. Not that people haven't, you know, passed away, unfortunately. None of that. I'm not discrediting it at all as a serious virus. But what I am talking about is when people have like this mass hysteria kind of thing, right? Yes, there was a lot of ice. Yes, we had some snow, but it's not like Texas had never had snow or ice before. Unfortunately, what was not common was the power outage and the way that it was handled. And because of the way that it was handled, I think people responded in a, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God kind of thing. And it just spread because every news story that you saw was literally somebody, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, right? Or the grocery stores are out of food. What are we going to do? The whole kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So spiritually, or from a spiritual concept, I believe that that's what made it sort of kind of larger than life. Because you asked me about it, and what did I tell you? I was the complete opposite. All I could think about is, God, thank you. I'm so grateful that even though it's 16 degrees outside, it's literally almost 60 degrees still in our apartment, and we're not freezing to death, right? No, we can't flush the toilet for 4 days, but this is not the end of the world, right? We're still okay for the most part. So I think a lot of it is just people's mindset and their perspective. We've talked about that too. What do you think about that, Joel? Even though you may not have been here experiencing it.
Well, I completely, everything you said, not shockingly, it's completely in tune with what I believe. The fear we give something, the energy we give it, the collective energy can amplify it as well. And you know, Walt will tell you, I don't watch any news. I literally watch no news. I watch.
Yeah,
nothing.
I don't either.
Yeah. It's.
I don't even have cable. Haven't for 10 years.
Yeah. And so it's called programming for a reason. They literally are programming your brain. So, and the most effective way, Walt's a political science major, and he will tell you that fear in campaigns is, you know, that there's science behind that. And, you know, so, you know, that's how it's not a positive campaign anymore. It's who can scare you the most.
Yes.
And how that unique candidate can protect you. And same thing down in, you know, Texas. And again, my thoughts and prayers do go out to all that. I mean, it's not that this isn't a serious problem. That's not what you're saying. It's the concept that the collective nature of it all, we, you know, the doom and gloom perpetuates it to a higher degree.
Mm-hmm.
My son, that Justin that I mentioned to you earlier, when he first moved in, we get weather reports. Again, we're in Central Virginia, but you know, the news always makes things worse. We had like a hurricane coming our way. Well, mm-hmm. we're in the middle of Virginia. I'm not really worried about hurricane, but.
It's not like you're on the coast.
Yeah. I grew up in Florida on the coast, so I know what that is, but so anyway, so he kept saying, Dad, do we have an evacuation plan or do we have an emergency plan is what he kept asking. And I go, yeah, we got one. And so finally one day he's really frustrated. He's only like 11. And he goes, Dad, I need to know our emergency plan, all this stuff. And I said, okay, if something comes here, we're going to get in our car and we're going to leave. And he goes, well, that's not much of an emergency plan. I said, well, just go to another place. I said, we got a house on the beach. We'll go down to Florida and hang out on the beach for a month or two. So what does it matter?
Right.
We're good.
And
now he's now 15 and certainly he's learned me and he laughs at anything like that now, but but that is my contingency plan. Yeah. If we're alive, we'll just keep moving on. I'll deal with it as it comes up. And like you're saying, you can look at what's wrong, but in the power, this is, I've always bring the power of now into this concept of sort of, that right now in this moment, no matter how bad, if you're alive and you're breathing and you're not starving to death, right now, this moment, we're okay. And that's all you can do and get through it. And then you take the lesson instead of, running around trying to figure out, okay, look, we need to really step up our power grid, Texas. We got to figure this out. And without all these hearings, it's real simple. Elon Musk can literally put, satellites and cars in the orbit, and surely you can figure out how to keep Texas electricity off.
Right.
Surely,
maybe I need to talk to Elon.
Well, I'm sure he's living in Texas now, so maybe he will solve it for him. But trust me, he could. So, but that's exactly right. And I think when people sort of hear that alternative narrative that you just spoke of, there's a tendency to say, oh, she's one of those anti-coronavirus people. And it's not, no, that's not what you're saying.
Right.
Coronavirus is real.
It's real.
It's real. I'm getting, I'm taking the precautions that are necessary for me and my family and all that. So I'm not minimalizing it, but you can't every day wake up fearing getting the coronavirus. You take the precautions you can. And I have a, sort of a double edge. I'm incredibly healthy. I've not been sick in probably 4 years, other than a cold or something like that. And if I were to get it, I have zero doubt. I would dismiss it. That's me. That's not saying that somebody that got it is weak or weak minded. I'm just saying for me, I haven't had the flu in 15 years. So I'm not going to likely get the coronavirus. And if I were, I got an incredible immune system that would kick its butt really quick.
Yeah.
And living that, while simultaneously, I have a very safe vehicle, but I don't drive 190 miles an hour on curves. So, living within, there is a certain amount of caution. And when I say caution, just being aware of safety, but this is the awakening that we're starting to realize that what you focus on, you attract. And that's just the bottom line. And when every day, and this was so telling in the beginning of the coronavirus, they had the countdown to how many people died or how many every day. Mm-hmm. 48,000 people died and blah, blah. Now, they didn't mention 3,742 have had the virus and cleared it. They didn't mention
that. No, they're not going to tell you that.
Yeah. Because it doesn't sell. And then all of it's like these number of people died or the highest increase or all this other stuff. And it's like, no, you're not reporting it fairly because you put the focus on, it is a very survivable for not everyone, but for a lot of people, it is very survivable. And so let's put a right amount of energy into it, that there's somewhere between zero attention to it and 100% attention to it. And there's somewhere in there that's a healthy percentage of attention to it. I'm aware it exists. I'm in the gym every day of my life. So I wash my hands.
Me too.
I multiple times. One thing I also noticed that, when I say I don't get sick, I don't count little silly colds and stuff like where you get stopped up. And, nobody's getting the flu this year because our safety, one good thing is coming. People are wiping down their stuff better. People are doing so, the idea that it does work when you try to just take the most basic precautions, but just living a fear-based existence invites more things to be fearful of. And, unfortunately, it's a very, it's pervasive in our society and the media and our politics. No matter which media you turn into, they're making you scared about the other side. And it's just the way they do it. And there's nobody really saying what we're going to do for you as much as they're saying is what those people are going to do. And they're going to ruin your life. They're going to take your guns away or your right to be this or your right to be that. It's just, there's so many things. They're just not true.
Right.
One of the things we talked about a lot, Joel, is whenever we did these shows, how quickly the hour goes by, and it did it once again.
Oh, I really? Oh, wow, it did.
I mean, it just flew. which shows how much we're into it and how high the vibe is. We don't even pay attention to it. But yeah, we just blew through another hour, and it was a wonderful hour. Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
But so all this means is that, Joel, you're going to have to keep checking your schedule and finding more times to come by and visit us again. That's all there is to
it. Definitely.
I will. Monique, it was so nice to meet you. Thank you for allowing me to sit in today.
The pleasure was all mine. Anytime, please come back.
Absolutely. All right. Yeah.
Thank you, Walt.
We love having you, Joel, and keep doing all the good stuff you're doing, man. You're one of my favorite people in the world. So thank you very much.
Thank you, buddy. Good to see you. I got to get on the road, but it was good to see you. Thank you.
All right. Catch you later.
Have a good day.
Monique, what do you think? I mean, did I undersell him? I mean, come on. Let's be honest.
You did undersell him. For sure. You did.
Well, then I'm going to have to work on that. That's all there is to it.
He is absolutely amazing.
He's amazing, fabulous. I mean, I got to do, he was my co-host, my only co-host on a weekly basis for about 3 years.
Wow, really?
So every single week I got to have this conversation with him. Yeah, really, really good.
So lucky.
Well, that's why I keep inviting him back, and that's why I keep having people like you come on. I'm lucky. I'm lucky in so many different ways. The luck just keeps rolling and rolling and rolling.
Yeah.
I love it.
You're attracting it.
I am. Thank you for being the person I attracted. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I'm glad you attracted me too.
I'm glad as well. Absolutely.
I love being here every week. This is amazing. You have some really great guests. Last week.
Wonderful people.
With Dean, and then this week with Joel. Yeah.
And it just keeps getting better and better and better.
It does. So, tomorrow you'll be with Daniel?
Yep, Dan Mangata tomorrow, yeah.
Yep.
And you're going to be dropping by next Monday, maybe? Is that a possibility? All right.
Yes.
Because Louie and Amy, they were already ready for you. I mean, they're all set.
Tell them to get ready, because this Monday, yes, definitely.
Okay. They have everything lined up. I mean, as soon as I even mentioned it, they were like, oh, you know, and they started telling me all this stuff and so forth. So yeah, it's going to be good. All right.
Awesome.
We're like 2 minutes over, and PRN doesn't like that. And this goes on PRN. So I'm going to have to stop right here, but thank you very much, Monique. And thank you very much to our live streamers, and especially thank you to our podcast listeners as well. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, guys.